The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was a captivating radio drama that aired in the U.S. from 1939 to 1950. This thrilling show is based on the timeless Sherlock Holmes stories by Arthur Conan Doyle. Now, Basil Rathbone played Sherlock Holmes for a long time. He played the brilliant detective from 1939 to 1946. His portrayal is widely remembered and celebrated. Rathbone's distinctive voice and sharp intellect brought Holmes to life, making him an enduring favorite among fans. Nigel Bruce played Dr. John Watson. Nigel Bruce portrayed the loyal and affable Dr. Watson during the same period from 1939 to 1947. His chemistry with Rathbone created a delightful dynamic between the two characters. Watson's narration and camaraderie with Holmes added depth to the series. In 1947, Basil Rathbone stepped down from his role as Holmes, and Tom Conway took over. Now, Conway continued the legacy, albeit briefly, as the great detective. John Stanley also had a turn as Holmes, sharing the spotlight with various Watsons. His tenure spanned from 1947 to 1949, and then another gentleman, Ben Wright, stepped in as a stand-in for Tom Conway in 1947, and later became regular Watson from 1949 to 1950. These talented actors contributed to the enduring popularity of Sherlock Holmes on the radio. Their performances brought mystery, intrigue, and deductions to countless listeners. And I might also add that Sherlock Holmes, when he was played by Basil Rathbone, he was in so many movies and on the radio so long that Rathbone was always considered Sherlock Holmes, and he really wanted to do other characters. That's why he quit. The adventure on this heirloom radio broadcast of the new Sherlock Holmes is The Speckled Band, and it was on June 23rd, 1947. We have another one, too, that'll be airing fairly quickly. It is called Sherlock Holmes Adventure of the Innocent Murderess. And that was a week later than the other one that I just described, June 30th, 1947. So I'll put up the first one, and then the next one will show up in a week or so. My name is John Lovering, and thank you very much for listening. Have fun with Holmes. Get your hat, your pipe, your magnifying lens, and go for it.
And Kreml Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Now, here we are once again in Dr. Watson's study. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell.
What incident are you going to tell us about this evening, Dr. Watson?
Well, I haven't quite decided. Supposing we... What was that? Oh, the fire. Top log has fallen off. Where did I put that poker? Oh, here it is. There we go. Ah, that's better.
Oh, what a curious old poker, Dr. Watson. It looks as though it had been seen many years of service.
Yes, so it has, my dear fellow, so it has. It belonged to Sherlock Holmes himself in the days when we were sharing rooms in Baker Street. You know that... I think I could do no better than to tell you the particular incident that poker recalls to my mind.
Well, please do.
I can't recall any case which presented more singular features than that which we always referred to as the adventure of the Speckled Band.
Speckled Band? What does that mean, Dr. Watson?
We'll get to that in a minute, Mr. Bell. But first...
Men, hot summer days are with us again. And after a day spent under a hot, broiling sun, does your hair look as stiff as straw, dry, matted, or tangled? Does the humidity make it stringy and look rumpled and unattractive? Then don't make the mistake of plastering your hair down with greasy, sticky goo. Instead, put Kreml Hair Tonic on the job. Kreml is that famous modern hair tonic. Such a wonderful, natural-looking hairdressing. Kreml has just enough light oils to keep dry, stringy hair neatly groomed throughout the hottest, stickiest day. Yet Kreml never leaves the hair looking or feeling greasy. It never leaves any unpleasant odor. Kreml always feels clean on both hair and scalp. You see, Kreml is able to give you all these advantages because it contains a special combination of hair grooming ingredients which is found in no other hair tonic. So men, make Kreml a daily must this summer for that handsome, clean-cut look from morning till night. K-R-E-M-L, Kreml Hair Tonic. Now, Dr. Watson, how about the adventure of the speckled band?
It was early one April morning, very early, I might say. Holmes, as you doctors know, was a notoriously late riser. So you can imagine my surprise to find him standing fully dressed by the side of my bed.
Watson, I say, Watson, wake up. Watson, old fellow, if you don't manage to wake up immediately, I shall be obliged to empty the contents of this water pitcher over your...
What's up? Is there a fire?
No, a client.
Oh, a client?
Quite so. A client. It's a girl. A rather charming-looking girl. She is waiting in the sitting room now.
Oh, sure?
Here, I'll open the door crack so you can take a look at her.
Lady dressed in black and so heavily veiled that you can't tell a thing about her. Where's my other slipper?
On the contrary, my dear Watson, we can gather a great deal about her. Here's your slipper on the table where you left it last night as a paperweight. Your tie, your good tie, is on the third shelf behind Boswell's Life of Johnson. I presume that's the one you want, inasmuch as it's the one you always wear when you wish to make an impression on one of the opposite sex.
Don't be silly, old man.
But to return to the young lady. She left home very early this morning, came by train, and yet she had a good drive in a dog cart along heavy roads before she reached the station.
Holmes, you're trying to be uncanny again.
Not at all, my dear Watson. It's as plain as the nose on your face. The left arm of her jacket is patted with mud. There's no vehicle save a dog cart which throws up mud in that disgusting way. As for the train journey, I observed the second half of a return ticket in the palm of her left glove.
Which I never even saw it.
Oh, yes, you did, Watson. You merely did not notice it.
Well, that's all very interesting, but I think we've kept the young lady waiting long enough. Shall we go into her?
By all means. You go first. You're certain to create the more favorable impression.
Oh, thanks very much. good morning.
Oh, is this Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
I'm that gentleman. This is my intimate friend and associate, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
You may speak freely before him.
Oh, I see.
Won't you sit down by the fire? I observe that you're shivering.
No, thank you. It's not the cold that makes me shiver.
Oh? What then?
This fear, Mr. Holmes. This terror. I can stand this strain no longer. I had to come to you.
I shall be happy, madam, to devote myself to your case if you'll just lay before us everything that may help us in forming an opinion on the matter.
My name is Helen Stoner. I'm living with my stepfather, who is the last survivor of the Royalists of Stoke Moran, an old Saxon family.
Oh, I say, Holmes, I heard of him. He's a doctor, isn't he? Went out to Calcutta.
Yes, that is my stepfather.
Oh.
While in India, he married my mother, the young widow of Major General Stoner. My sister Julia and I were twins. We were only two at the time of the marriage.
You were brought up in India, then?
No. Dr. Rollett was forced to return to this country due to a scandal.
Scandal? Oh, really?
Oh, Watson, don't interrupt.
Well, what a scandal, wasn't it?
Shortly after that, my mother died, leaving about £2,000 a year to Dr. Rollett as long as we, my sister and I, resided with him. However, in the event of our marriage, we were to receive $550 a year apiece.
And did either of you marry?
No. As a matter of fact, after Mother's death, a terrible change came over Dr. Roylott. He quarreled violently with everyone in the neighborhood, so that we were left almost entirely to ourselves. His only friends are a band of wandering gypsies whom he permits to encamp on the property from time to time. He also has a passion for Indian animals.
That's stunning.
At this moment, he owns a cheetah and a baboon.
Hmm. Not very cheerful surroundings for two young women.
Oh, one gets used to things. The only person we were allowed to visit was a sister of Mother's. While Julia was there, she met the man to whom she became engaged.
I see, and of course your stepfather objected violently.
No. No, surprisingly enough, he did not.
Oh?
He offered no objections whatever to the marriage.
But I thought that you said that neither of you had ever married.
So I did, Dr. Watson. Julia did not marry because within a fortnight of the day which had been fixed for the wedding, she died.
Died?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Under the most horrible circumstances.
Can you describe this unfortunate event in detail?
Oh, yes, Mr. Holmes. Every second of that dread time is seared in my memory. The bedrooms at Stoke Moran are on the ground floor. They open off a common passage. Of these bedrooms, the first is Dr. Roylott's, the second my sister's, and the third my own.
I see.
There's no communication between them. Do I make myself clear?
Perfectly so.
The windows of the three rooms open out on the lawn. The fatal night, we'd all gone to our rooms early, having carefully locked our bedroom doors on account of a cheetah and a baboon, which were allowed to wander about at will. Suddenly, as I was about to blow out my light, I heard Julia knocking at my door. Oh, just a minute, I'll unlock the door. Why, Julia, you look as pale as a sheet. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. At least, nothing I can put my finger on. Maybe it's the wind and the rain. Who locked the door, Helen? I'm afraid.
Afraid? Whatever of?
Well, I really don't know. I feel what the Irish call say, as though death were lurking around the corner. Something seems to keep trying to warn me.
Oh, nonsense, Julia. You're upset. Perhaps the excitement over your wedding. Why aren't you asleep?
Well, I can't. Father keeps pacing up and down next door. But it's not that. It's
what?
Tell me, Helen. Have you ever heard anyone whistle in the dead of night?
Never.
I don't suppose it could be you in your sleep.
Oh, Julia, don't be absurd.
Well, the last few nights I've heard it. A low, clear whistle. About 3 a.m. And for some reason, it seems to be warning me.
Well, it might be those wretched gypsies in the plantation. Oh,
probably. And yet, if it were on the lawn, I wonder that you didn't hear it, too.
Oh, you know how soundly I sleep.
Oh, well, I'm probably being very foolish. I'll go back to bed and let you get some sleep. Helen?
Yes, what is it?
Would you mind standing here until you hear me lock my door?
Of course not, silly.
Well, good night.
Good night, you goose. There. Gracious, she's getting jumpy. I'll be glad when she's safely married. Listen to that wind. What was that? Nothing. I'm getting as nervous as Julia. I hope nothing. Julia! Julia, what's the matter? There was a whistle. I heard it. Julia! Julia, open the door! Julia! Julia, what's happened? Don't stagger like that, darling. I'm coming to you.
No, it's the band. The speckled band.
Julia! Julia, what do you mean? Oh, merciful heaven, she's having convulsions. Father! Father, help! Help!
And what was found in your sister's room?
That's the strange part. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The windows were barred by old-fashioned shutters with broad iron bars, and the door was locked on the inside. My sister was alone when she met her doom.
Hmm. Any marks of violence?
None.
What about poison?
The doctors examined her for it, but without success. It's my belief that my sister died of fright. Pure fright.
When did all this happen?
About 2 years ago.
And why do you come to me at this late date?
Well, I myself am expecting to be married shortly to a man I've known for many years. 2 days ago, some repairs were started in the west wing of the building so that I've been forced to move into the room where my sister died. Sleep in the very bed in which she slept. Imagine, then, my thrill of terror when last night, as I lay awake thinking over her terrible fate, I suddenly heard the low whistle which heralded her death.
Good gracious, Mary.
Quiet, Watson.
I jumped up, lit the light, but could find nothing. I came straight to you as soon as it was daylight.
If we were to come down to Stoke Moran today, would it be possible to look over these rooms without the knowledge of your stepfather?
He spoke of coming into town today on some important business. It's probable that he will be away all day.
Excellent. You may expect us then. Sometime this afternoon, if that is convenient.
Oh, yes.
Oh, thank you so very much. I shall look forward to seeing you again this afternoon. Goodbye, Jack.
Goodbye. Well, my dear Holmes, what do you think of it all? What do you make of the sister's dying words, the speckled bear?
It may merely have been the effect of delirium. Or it may have referred to the band of gypsies who sometimes wear spotted kerchiefs. Then again, it may be something much more deadly. Dear, someone seems to be very anxious to see us. Come in.
Which of you is Holmes?
That is my name, sir.
I am Dr. Grimesby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Indeed. Pray take a seat.
I will do nothing of the kind. My stepdaughter has been here. I traced her. What did she say to you?
It's a little cold for this time of year.
You put me off, do you? I've heard of you before. You're Holmes, the meddler. Holmes, the busybody. Holmes, the Scotland Yard jack in office.
My dear doctor, all this does not alter the fact that it is still decidedly chilly. I seem to feel a draft. Would you mind closing the door from the outside?
I will go when I've had my say. Don't meddle with my affairs. You'll find I'm a dangerous man to fall foul of. Look here.
Look out, Holmes. You've got the poker.
Watch this.
Say, Holmes, he's bent our poker almost double.
My dear fellow, give me that poker. I really can't allow you, sir, to go around breaking up our little household, even if you are a good 40 pounds heavier than I am. Allow me.
Good heavens, Holmes, you've straightened the blasted thing out again.
Well, I'll... Just the same. Look out for me. Both of you.
Charming fellow.
Quite. And now, Watson, breakfast. Then I have one or two errands to do. After that, suppose you meet me at Waterloo Station at about 11:30.
Right, you are, Holmes. I'll be there on the dot.
And you might slip your service revolver into your pocket. It's an excellent argument with a gentleman who can twist pokers into knots.
In just a moment, we'll see what awaits Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson on their visit to Dr. Roylott's home, Stoke Moran. Are you one of the many men who find it difficult to keep your hair neatly groomed in summer? Does the burning sun bake and scorch your hair, making it look messy and not the least attractive? Then try Cremel Hair Tonic. Just notice the amazing change in the appearance of your hair. You see, Cremel does lots more than just keep your hair looking handsome. This highly specialized hair tonic gives you your money's worth. It contains a unique combination of hair grooming ingredients which is found in no other hair tonic. Cremel is simply great to lubricate a dry scalp. And if the sun dries your hair so that it breaks off and falls, Cremel helps condition the hair in that it leaves it feeling so much softer and more pliable when you comb it. At the same time, Cremel removes itchy, loose dandruff and leaves the scalp feeling so cool, refreshed, and alive. So be smart, men. Buy a bottle of Cremel at any drug counter. Ask for an application at your barber shop. Use Cremel daily for better groomed hair, a more hygienic scalp. K-R-E-M-L, Cremel Hair Tonic. Now, Dr. Watson, you were to meet Sherlock Holmes at Waterloo Station. Is that right?
Quite right, Mr. Bell. And an hour or so afterwards, found us walking in a country lane. Got a match, Holmes? What a perfect day for a walk in the country.
I'm glad you enjoy it.
Isn't that a house poking its head above those trees over there?
Yes, that must be Stoke Moran, the home of our genial friend, Dr. Roylott. I fancy we'll find it shorter to go across the field, and safer in case the good doctor has returned home.
Yes, there's a stile over there where the lady is walking.
And the lady, I fancy, is Miss Stoner. Oh, no, my dear Watson, don't try to vault the fence. Remember, you're getting a bit plump.
Oh, rubbish.
Better climb the stile sedately, as I'm doing. That's it.
Good afternoon, Miss Stoner. You see, we've been as good as our word.
I've been waiting so eagerly for you. Everything has turned out splendidly. Dr. Roylott has gone to town, and I don't expect him back before evening.
We had the pleasure of making the good doctor's acquaintance.
Good heavens, he follows me? What will he say when he returns?
You must lock yourself in your room tonight. If he is violent, we shall take you to your aunt's at Harrow.
Don't you think we'd better be getting on with our business before that appalling fellow comes crashing home?
Quite. Handsome old house. I see you're doing some repairs.
Yes. This is the wall of my own room that they're working on.
Quite. By the way, this wall seems to be in pretty good condition. And this, the center room was your sister's, I take it?
Yes. I'm sleeping there for the present. We can enter it by way of the French window.
First of all, if you'll be good enough to go inside and lower the iron shutter, I'd like to see just how impregnable it is.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Holmes. Just a moment.
Yes. It seems to be quite impassable. You may raise it again. May we come in?
Please do. This is the room, just as she used to have it.
Chest of drawers, bed, dressing table, two wicker chairs. Nothing very extraordinary, huh? Wait a minute. I say the bed's nailed to the floor. It's immovable.
I never noticed that.
The long cord. It's a bell pull, isn't it?
Yes.
What does it communicate with?
The housekeeper's room. But I don't think my sister ever used it.
It seems newer than the other things.
Yes, it was put up about 2 years ago.
Do you mind if I give it a pull?
Certainly not.
Uh-huh. As I thought. It's a dummy.
Dummy? You mean that it won't ring?
No, Watson, it definitely won't ring. It's not even attached to a wire. Very interesting. It seems to be securely fastened just above the opening of that little ventilator.
Oh, that ventilator was built several years ago, too. It goes into Father's room.
I see. Suppose we take a peek at the doctor's room.
Certainly. Come this way.
I wish you'd hurry, Holmes. I'm getting a bit jumpy. What if the doctor should decide to come home?
This is my father's room.
Nothing very exciting in here. Just the usual man's bedroom. Except for the safe. You don't by any chance know what he keeps in there, do you, Miss Stoner?
Oh, business papers, I think. I've only seen the inside of it once, and that was some years ago.
There isn't a cat in it by any chance.
No. What a strange idea.
Well, look at the saucer of milk.
No, we don't keep a cat. But of course, there's a cheetah and a baboon.
Mr. Holmes, look here at this vicious-looking little whip.
Yes, I noticed that. The interesting point is that it is curled upon itself and tied so as to make a small noose of whipcord.
Hello? What's that? I thought I heard a carriage. Yes, by Jove. Must be the doctor coming home.
Go, please. Quickly, before he finds you here.
First of all, promise to do as I tell you. Your life may depend on it.
I'll do whatever you say.
Dr. Watson and I must spend the night in your room.
Mr. Holmes.
Let me explain. We will hide at the lower end of the meadow. We can see your window from there. You must lock yourself in on pretense of a headache. When you hear your father retire to his room for the night, open the shutters of your window. Put your lamp there as a signal to us, and then withdraw into the room you used to occupy. The rest you must leave in our hands.
Yes, yes, I will. Only please go now. No, not that way. Here, through the window.
In this blasted meadow all night. I'm chilled to the bone in this wind. Why can't we go down to the inn? I'm sure we can see the windows of Stoke Moran just as well from there.
Impossible, Watson. When the time comes, we must go and go quickly. A human life may depend on the speed with which we can reach the house.
I say, you give me the creeps.
What's that?
Look, do you see it? There in the bushes. A ghastly misshapen figure.
Must have been a baboon. Look, Watson. The middle window.
By Jove, it's our signal. The lamp.
Come along. Hurry. And walk quietly.
So dark, I can hardly see her. I think there'll be a storm coming. Just listen to that wind.
Here we are. Step inside through the window. No noise. I shall sit on the bed. You sit in that chair. Ready? I'm going to turn up the lamp.
I say, Holmes.
Shh. The least sound would be fatal to our plans. Have you your revolver handy?
Yes.
Good. Whatever you do, don't go to sleep. Your life may depend on it.
Eleven o'clock.
Yes. We're in for a long and dreadful vigil.
Sleep. Whatever you do, don't move. That wicker chair makes an infernal racket.
Holmes! Do you hear that? There it is again. You don't suppose this place is haunted, do you?
That, I fancy, is the cheetah. Look, Watson. The ventilator. A gleam of light. Now it's gone again. Wait, wait. Things are beginning to move. Quiet now.
What's that? Quick, strike a match. Strike a match, Watson. There it is, the filthy thing. There, take that and that.
Holmes, what is it? For the love of heaven, why are you slashing that bell pull with your whip?
You saw it, Watson. You saw it. Aha, my friend. Too late. Too late. Ah, how ghastly. How perfectly vile.
No! No!
Holmes, what does that mean?
It means that it's all over. And I think for the best. Come, we shall enter Dr. Roylott's room. Keep your pistol handy. Come quickly.
But Holmes, the door's locked.
Break it in. Wait, I'll help you. Now then, one, two, three.
Holmes. Holmes, look. On the floor, the doctor. He's dead. Good heavens. What a ghastly look on his face.
As I expected.
Do you see that? The band round his forehead?
That, Watson, is the speckled band.
Great thunder, it's moving. It's a snake.
Yes, a swamp adder. The deadliest snake in India. The doctor died within 10 seconds of being bitten. Here, hand me that dog whip with the noose. Look out, Watson, don't go near. That's better.
Hey, what are you going to do?
The noose goes over the reptile's head, so. And we lift it into the safe, so, and close the door.
I think I'm going to be sick.
No wonder. The doctor's thrust his little playfellow through that ventilator for the last time, I fancy.
But look here, Holmes. I still don't quite understand.
It's all quite simple, my dear Watson. Amazingly simple. Our good doctor made use of the reptile to remove his stepdaughter when she threatened to get married and deprive him of her income. That snake has been living in the safe for some time, I imagine. The saucer of milk was its daily ration.
Yes, but how did he succeed? I mean, by what method?
Look at that chair. He must have been standing on that chair. Notice the heel marks, Watson. He thrust the slimy thing through the ventilator into the next room, being careful not to touch it with his hands, but to use the whip, as you saw me do. It was the noose on the lash of the whip that convinced me this afternoon that we were on the right track.
I see. That was why the bell pull was attached to the ventilator in the other room, so that the snake could crawl down.
Exactly. And that was why the bed was nailed within reach of the bell pull.
Filthy beast.
The first attempt was not successful in the case of either sister. The doctor, fearing this might happen, had trained the adder to return when he whistled, so that he could try again.
And then it must have been his whistle we heard when you began slashing at the bell pull.
Quite, my dear Watson. When he heard us, he wanted to recall it. But it was too late. The reptile had already thrust its venomous head through the ventilator when I began to slash at it. The snake turned back so enraged that it attacked the first thing it came in contact with, which, by mere coincidence, happened to be its master.
But look here, Holmes. Doesn't that make you indirectly responsible for the death of Dr. Roylott?
Possibly, my dear Watson, possibly. But I cannot say that it is likely to weigh very heavily upon my conscience.
Ladies, here's a sensational beauty tip direct from Hollywood. When you want your hair to look its radiant best for an important date, just do this the night before. Give your hair a 10-minute glamour bath with Kremel shampoo.
I certainly agree with that, Mr. Bell. And you know, Kremel shampoo is the same shampoo used by those famous beauties, the Powers model.
Kremel shampoo has been especially developed to glamour bathe each tiny strand of hair so that it fairly radiates natural, dazzling highlights. It leaves the hair simply gleaming with natural glossy luster. And what's more, your hair stays that way for days.
And please bear in mind that Kremel shampoo is not a soapless shampoo. It is not a cream shampoo. It's not a drying detergent. Not a harsh soap. It's entirely different.
Yes, Kremel shampoo uncovers all the natural highlights that lie concealed in every woman's hair. Yet it never dries the hair. In fact, Kreml shampoo has a built-in oil base which helps keep the hair from becoming dry or brittle. It removes dandruff flakes the first time you use it.
Kreml shampoo whips up a luxuriant active foam, even in the hardest water. It rinses out so easily and never leaves any dull, soapy film.
So, ladies, why not buy a bottle of Kreml shampoo at any drug counter and glamour bathe your hair to a vision of tantalizing loveliness? K-R-E-M-L, Kreml shampoo. Now, Dr. Watson, what about next week?
Well, now, let me see. Next week, I think I'll tell you a most bizarre and extraordinary story about a murder that was committed under our very eyes in our own flat.
In Baker Street? Good heavens, that certainly was unusual.
Not only was murder committed, but the murderer was later acquitted in court. If it hadn't been for Holmes's brilliant detective work, I'll tell you all about that next week. I call it The Adventure of the Innocent Murderess.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was adapted from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Speckled Band. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of Universal International Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. The Sherlock Holmes series is produced by Tom McKnight with original music composed and conducted by Alex Steinert. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kreml Hair Tonic and Kreml Shampoo and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time when Dr. Watson will tell us about the adventure of the innocent murderous. Full-time civilians, part-time sailors. That's a thumbnail sketch of the Naval Air Reserve, which this week celebrates its first post-war birthday. 30,000 strong, Naval Air Reserve stands ready to man the carriers and the planes of the reserve fleet should any national emergency arise. We doff our hats to the reserves of naval aviation, the officers and men of Naval Air Reserve on this, their first post-war birthday. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.